Blog Talk Radio.
Mistakes like that. How could you sit down and do a show where you talk for a really long time and you don't have your drink next to you? Nobody wants to hear the parched and the lip smacking, the cotton mouthy sound. That's such a pet peeve of mine, so I do my best to avoid it. And now random things are popping up on the screen behind me. That's pretty common occurrence. A lot of stuff to get to today. So the Democrats are still lost in the wilderness. I have an article that explains how they don't know how to attack Republicans for the upcoming election in 2018. You couldn't have an easier opponent, and they're lost. They're like, I don't know what to do. I mean, the guys you're against are everything that they're for damages the American people. Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe Trump and Russia and things still popping up on the screen behind me. Classic secular talk. So I'm going to actually lead with that because it's that important a story. Fox News is continuing to call for all-out war because they're Fox News. While you're criticizing Trump's tweets, I'm going to tell you what Republican lawmakers have quietly been doing. Expanding the kleptocracy, but the details of that are quite obnoxious. I mean, they're just fucking rubbing it in now. And then later on, we also have YouTubers getting involved in the net neutrality fight. And I'm a little bit offended that I wasn't asked to participate. Yeah, YouTubers doing the right thing, but why'd you guys leave me out, man? That's fucked up. So we'll get to that a little bit later. Okay, without further ado, let's get started. And we'll kick it off with the Lost Boys and women, of course, Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them. Okay, hopefully as I start this story, things will not continue to pop up behind me. The Democrats are still lost in the wilderness. This is from The Hill. They're divided on how to attack Republicans for the 2018 election, which is incredible. Listen to what they say. House Democrats are at odds over whether attacks on President Trump will prove to be a winning campaign message in 2018. Trump's approval numbers are well underwater, so many Democrats maintain that linking the unpopular president to vulnerable Republicans is the obvious way to pick up the 24 seats the party needs to win back the House after 8 years in the minority. I think we can tie House Republicans to the failure of the Trump administration, said Representative G.K. Butterfield, who, by the way, sounds like a pompous fat cat. G.K. Butterfield here. That's how it sounds like he talks. It's conceivable we could probably win back the House. Yet Trump's meteoric rise in the political world has been built around defying odds and upending expectations, and his populist appeal and resilience to controversy paved his way to the White House, stunning Democrats who wrongly believed the mercurial reality TV star would be a drag on Republicans down the ballot. A number of Democrats say the party would be foolish to try that strategy again next year. Quote, I don't want to run against Trump, Representative Bill Pascrell, a Democrat of New Jersey, said. My recommendation is to run against the Republican Party, and I think our party has made a mistake by emphasizing too much Mr. Trump. He'll speak for himself, and he'll trip on himself. Representative John Larson of Connecticut, a former chairman of the House Democratic Caucus, said the 2018 midterm elections will hinge on a single issue, jobs. And everything else, including the Republicans' efforts to repeal Obamacare and the ongoing investigation into Russia's meddling in the presidential election, will be overshadowed by the degree to which voters feel financially secure. With that in mind, Larson said, the Democrats need to do much more than simply attack Trump. They need an aggressive economic message that resonates with marginalized voters who want help from Washington. Okay, so that last guy, Representative John Larson, he's the closest to correct of everybody that they outline in the article. But here's the problem. And you can go check it out. You can go read the entire article yourself if you want to. But here's what's not mentioned in the article on the 2018 strategy for Democrats in the election. Medicare for All, not mentioned once. Free college, not mentioned once. Ending the wars, not mentioned once. Living wage, not mentioned. New Deal, not mentioned. Green technology revolution, not mentioned. So, in the conversation on how to run in 2018, the camps are, let's bring up Trump, because, like, you know, Trump's like Trump, and he's bad, and he's not good. And, like, it's easy to run against him because he's, like, bad. You know what I'm saying? That's one camp. Just say Trump, and that's the magic words, and click your heels, and then we win. This is Hillary Clinton's strategy, and it didn't work. She couldn't beat him. That's one camp. The other camp is like, well, you know, we should go out there and say, like, jobs, we're in favor of jobs. But what does that mean? You got to be more specific. We're in favor of jobs, and we're against you not having jobs. Aren't we so smart? No, you're really fucking vague, and it's kind of stupid. It's like the standard political buzzwords, like, I will press button, and hopefully you like. Jobs. Yay. Oh, see, I'm a genius. I figured out how to campaign well. And another one they say is healthcare. Like, they just say, healthcare. We should run on healthcare. What does that mean? What do you mean run on healthcare? There's a million different aspects of healthcare. Are you going to run pushing a public option? Are you just going to run defending Obamacare? Are you going to run on Medicare for All, which is what you should run on? Well, the answer is, there's a lot of things that keep popping up on the screen behind me, and it's fucking annoying. The answer is, they're never going to stand up on their own and run on the classic, standard, liberal, progressive positions. Because at every opportunity, they snub the base and go in the other direction. So they're not gonna on their own scream about Medicare for All. They're not gonna scream about free college. They're not gonna scream about expanding Medicaid and Medicare. They're not gonna talk about a green technology revolution, a new deal. They're not gonna talk about ending the wars. So we need to drag them to those positions, because the more you leave them on their own, they're so disconnected that people like Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the Democrats, she had the nerve to say, when some people were like, hey, maybe we should replace you because your record's abysmal. She's like, oh, come on, you can't replace me. I raise a lot of money from wealthy donors. That's your defense? Your defense is I'm the most corrupt. That's your defense. That's unbelievable. So, yeah, that's the fucking problem, Nancy. That's the problem. Is that your only thing you have to rely on is, I raise a lot of money from rich people. And then guess what? That drags the party further in a right-wing direction. That's what it does. That's the effect of that. It drags the party further in a right-wing direction because the Democrats are going to represent their donors, and they're not going to represent the constituents. They're not going to represent the people who are screaming. Look at the poll numbers. Look at the poll numbers on raising taxes on the rich, ending the wars, free college, Medicare for All. And she also has the nerve to say, I don't think the American people are there yet on Medicare for All. Then you haven't looked at the polls. It's that simple. Oh, God, they're so embarrassing. So they don't get it. They're a mix of, like, totally lost, and they genuinely are just out of touch, and they don't get it. But then it's the other part of it is sold out to corporate donors. So that's why a primary strategy for so long has been Russia, Russia, Russia. Now, recently, some Democrats have realized, hey, this isn't working. When I go back for town halls, nobody's talking about Russia. Nobody's talking about it. So that's not going to work. So some of them are coming to that page, but now the next step in the evolution of their message is, maybe we just talk about Trump's bad? And then the people who are one step beyond that go, you talk about jobs? It's like, okay, you guys, you're dragging behind the rest of the liberal progressive base and the rest of the American people who are regular people who just want their lives improved by better policy that's not that doesn't set up an economy that's rigged against them. And they're never going to come to that position because some of them are too stupid to get it, but then it's also, hey, they got to serve their donors, and their donors' interests are at odds with your interests. So that's why the answer is JusticeDemocrats.com, because we're running candidates who take no corporate money, take no lobbyist money, take no PAC money. They only raise in small amounts from the people. And ultimately, we want to get money out of politics. So this isn't even a long-term solution of, hey, we'll just keep raising in little amounts from the people. We want to get clean elections by law. So they're going to fight for that. They're going to fight for all the progressive priorities that we talk about. And you can go read our platform. You can go read about our candidates. We've launched many of them. And if you want to get involved in the fight, it's justicedemocrats.com/donate. Remember, we're at an institutional disadvantage because our opponents can just raise a tremendous amount of money from big money donors. We don't have big money donors by design, so we need a lot from a few people. We need a lot of money from a lot of people, a lot of small dollar donations from a lot of people, regular people. So that's what we're working on here. You can go to justicedemocrats.com/donate, or if you want to get a Secular Talk shirt, half the proceeds for the Secular Talk shirt drive that we're doing are going to Justice Democrats. So that's booster.com/secular-talk-shirts. If you want to go that road, I can't believe after all this time, you know damn well how the Democrats can win. Bernie Sanders knows. Even Elizabeth Warren now gets it. She's listening to Bernie. She's like, ooh, this guy seems to be working. He's the most popular politician in the country, literally. So a bunch of people get it. It seems like the only people in the country who don't get it are the rest of the Democrats, where the best argument that they get, the best argument that they come up with is jobs. Going to have to be a little more specific and a little more progressive. As I believe it was the great philosopher Beyonce said, to the left, to the left. Okay. Now, let's move on to what's going on Fox News. It's not pretty. Here we go. Fox News is continuing the proud tradition of pounding the war drums. They did this for the war in Iraq. They did this for the war in Afghanistan. They did this for every intervention you can imagine, at least under Republican presidents. And look at what Jesse Waters called for yesterday.
I think the only legitimate option is an assassination attempt or a coup, but that possibility is probably the most difficult. So I think what President Trump needs to do is make sure the North Koreans, but as well, you know, South Korea, Japan, China, and Russia, believe that we are going to take preemptive action unless, and here's the unless. I think the unless has to be the intelligence agencies of Russia, South Korea, Japan, and China and the United States, they need to start collaborating and get some spies in there and get an assassination network or cell in there and to take preemptive action that way. Because I think a decapitation strategy is the best strategy. And ultimately, this is a huge test for Donald Trump, because if he doesn't rally the Pacific partners like he did rally the Sunni nations in the Middle East, we could have in a year or so, I don't know how long it's going to take, but a missile that could potentially reach San Francisco, could reach Los Angeles, and this is why it's not a partisan issue. This is not Iraq. This is not just a regional threat. This is a threat to the homeland. So I think, you know, Republicans and Democrats need to rally around the leadership of the president and try to get the UN involved, but make sure this menace does not reach our shores.
What the fuck is wrong with these people? What's wrong with these? How do you think that that's really a legitimate concern? Like, yeah, you know, look, we're going to have a missile. It's going to be able to reach L.A. or San Francisco.
Even if he were to have a missile that reaches L.A. or San Francisco, this is the same bullshit argument they use with Saddam Hussein. The assumption is, well, I mean, obviously he's going to look at that button and go, and just launch a fucking nuke on San Francisco or L.A. Okay, they are a backwards, crazy, authoritarian dictatorship, and the country is a hostage crisis. It's hell on earth. But he's a threat to his own people. The country is a gnat. They spend, what, 1% of what we spend on our military, they spend on their military? What are you concerned about? Again, same bullshit they did with Saddam Hussein. First it was, Saddam Hussein did 9/11. That was the first argument. Then when that became clear that it was utter bullshit, they moved the goalposts. Well, okay, first we said Saddam Hussein did 9/11, but okay, the reality is Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. First of all, the U.S. sold him a lot of fucking weapons. So I love that. Like, oh yeah, we sell you weapons. Then years later, we turn around and go, I can't believe you have weapons. What the fuck is that? That's such so fucking weaselly on the world stage of the U.S. is. But they go, okay, he has WMDs. Which, by the way, he didn't actually have WMDs. But if he did, why is it like the default assumption of these idiots and the people who just chugging that military-industrial complex Kool-Aid are like, obviously he's going to launch in like 8 minutes. What are we doing? Why are we sitting around? Attack, 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 attack. Or not. Or these are tiny-ass fucking countries that have, they're not a rich country. They don't have power. They don't have a gigantic military that's a threat to anybody in the modern world. But we're discussing them as if they're, like, equal in size and strength, and Kim Jong-un is just sitting there like, ooh, red button, I can't wait to press it. They did a intercontinental ballistic missile test, and we're shitting our pants. Yeah, you know, maybe the reason they did that is a deterrent. Because, I don't know, we listed them in the Axis of Evil, and at least one of the countries in the Axis of Evil, we toppled their government, killed at least 200,000 civilians in their country, and broke the region. So maybe they go, damn. And think about it. Gaddafi, what happened with Gaddafi? He gave up his weapons of mass destruction. He's like, here, I see what happened with Saddam, so here, take my weapons of mass destruction. And then what? Then he got toppled anyway. And the U.S. was part of the bombing that toppled him. So what incentive? What incentive does Kim Jong-un, as much as he's despicable and grotesque and disgusting, and he's all those things, every negative thing ever said about him, it's true, okay? But what incentive does he have now? Like, oh, come on, you better stop with those nuclear weapons over there. And we promise, if you promise not to build nuclear weapons, then you'll be totally safe, bro. Well, that's what happened with Gaddafi. He got rid of his WMDs, and then he was toppled. So there's no incentive for Kim Jong-un to say, here, take my... Again, a deterrent. He thinks, well, now I have this, and they can't fuck with me. So as much of a menace as he is, he's a menace to his own people. But dipshits on Fox News are talking about,
San Francisco and L.A., they're in danger. This isn't a partisan issue. Everybody should rally behind him. You're right, this isn't a partisan issue. It should be. Everybody agrees. Why the fuck would we get involved in another war? Jesse, we have 7 interventions going on right now. Maybe we need a new law that says one war at a time. One war at a time. We'd have to roll back. We're in 2 full-scale wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we have 7 interventions, not to mention the drone war, 800 military bases around the world. It costs $100 billion a year just to maintain those military bases. We have a shadow war going on in Africa that nobody knows about or talks about. Nobody talks about it. Nobody knows about it. A shadow war going on in Africa. At any given time, right now as I'm talking to you, right now as you're watching this, there are at least 100 special ops missions, U.S. Special Forces missions going on around the world. When you poll people around the world, which country is the number one threat to world peace? They don't say Russia. They don't say North Korea. They don't say Pakistan. They don't say India. They say the United States of America. You want to know why? Because they can count. That's why. Oh, look at the countries invaded post-World War II. The U.S. blows everybody else away. Look at the civilian body count post-World War II. The U.S. blows everybody away. So, but these guys, totally oblivious. I mean, just fundamentally incapable
of turning the criticism inward and going, hey, what if we do offensive actions, we're the asshole? That used to be considered common sense. Like, oh, the asshole is the one who does the offensive attack. That's the asshole, by definition. They're the asshole, because they're the ones who are doing the offensive attack. They're not defending themselves. They're doing violence, and they're initiated. That used to be called you're the asshole. But now these guys are like, well, you know, it's the right thing to do. We got to do offensive violence. We got to do a decapitation strike. Hey, dipshit, what the fuck do you think is going to happen? Let's say in Jesse Waters' world, Waters' world is actually the name of his old segment on the O'Reilly Factor. But let's say he's emperor, and that's exactly what they do. They do a successful decapitation strike in North Korea, an assassination attempt. Kim Jong-un is dead. Then what? This sounds a lot like, yeah, Saddam, we got to topple Saddam, he's the worst. Okay, topple Saddam, then what? It was a fucking boondoggle. It was a clusterfuck. People were like, okay, what now? Well, let's have the Iraqi military just stay in power. No, we don't like them. Disband them. And then we'll have jobs for people. Okay, no, that didn't work out exactly as planned. And just war profiteering, you know, further sectarianism happened. What do you think is going to happen in North Korea? Everybody who's been brainwashed over decades and decades about how their dear leader is a demigod, you go in there and kill the demigod, and what are they going to do? Going to come up and thank you? Going to kiss your feet? Going to greet you as liberators, one of the many lies that were told in Iraq? And then who takes over the country? What do you think a fucking secular democracy is going to pop up like that? You know, oh, hey, look, everything's going great now. Isn't that wonderful? These are profoundly simple people. They're simpletons. They're dunces. And here's why I left out the most devastating point. Trump does nothing but watch cable news all day. That's what he does. There are reports he watches at least 6 hours of cable news every day. And this is the shit that they're talking about on cable news. This is what they're talking about. And Fox News is his favorite. So if he's watching this, which he probably is, and everybody's prodding him, he wasn't the only one, by the way. There are other clips, other people on the network saying, yeah, let's go to war with North Korea. If he watches Fox News and it's wall-to-wall coverage of, yeah, let's go attack North Korea, that pushes him in that direction. That's what that does. He watches that, and he's not a smart guy, and he watches that, and he goes, oh,
yeah, everybody wants me to do it. All my favorites want me to do it. What are we waiting for? Oh, call the generals in.
That can happen. That can really happen.
So be afraid. Be very afraid. Fox News hosts have tremendous influence on the direction our country goes. And this is the absolute worst direction. So we're all sitting here hoping for the best, but it doesn't look good. Okay. All right. Let me take a quick break, because what I want to do is get my drink, which, as you guys know, I left elsewhere. So let me grab my drink, take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about what the Republicans are doing in regards to the healthcare debate and a new piece of legislation proposed, by one of the good ones. One of the good ones. One of the good congresspeople. Okay, stay right there. We'll be right back.
I can't breathe, no, I'm feeling beat. with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You will fake so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
Son of a bitch! Alright, we're back.
So while everybody was criticizing Donald Trump's tweets, this is what's been going on. Republican lawmakers buy health insurance stocks as repeal effort moves forward. Wow, sounds like a little conflict of interest to me. Just as the House Republican bill to slash much of the Affordable Care Act moved forward, Representative Mike Conaway, a Texas Republican and member of Speaker Paul Ryan's leadership team, added a health insurance company to his portfolio. An account owned by Conaway's wife made two purchases of United Health stock worth as much as $30,000 on March 24th, the day the legislation advanced in the House Rules Committee, according to disclosures. The exact value of Conaway's investment isn't clear, given that congressional ethics forms only show a range of amounts, and Conaway's office did not respond to a request for comment. It was a savvy move. Health industry stocks, including insurance giants like UnitedHealth, have surged as Republicans move forward with their repeal effort, which rolls back broad taxes on healthcare firms while loosening consumer regulations which prevent insurance companies from denying coverage for medical treatment. UnitedHealth has gained nearly 7% in value since March 24th. This isn't the only guy who did it. We also have Jim Inhofe, who bought between $50,000 and $100,000 in United Health stock as well. And his office actually responded to The Intercept and their piece on this. And they're like, yeah, no, see, what had happened was Jim has people who do his financial stuff for him, and he had no idea that this is what was going on, so I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, United Health, what is that? What's United Health? I never heard of United Health. Have you heard of United Health? What's a health insurance company? I don't even know what that means. What are you talking about? I don't know anything, dog. Yeah, I'm sure you don't know anything. This story also reminds me of Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price. What did Tom Price do? He, as he was voting on legislation that affected certain healthcare companies, I think the name of this one was Immunotherapeutics or something like that, he was voting on bills that directly affect companies like that, and he was buying stock at the same time. Okay, this is like the textbook definition of a conflict of interest, of standard corruption. So they're corrupt in multiple ways. I mean, these guys take campaign contributions from big pharma, from private health insurance companies, from healthcare companies, medical device companies, stuff like that. They take campaign contributions from them. They propose bills that help them. But then there's also now with the Republicans, there's the added angle of they also invest in said companies as they propose bills to help those companies. You can't do that. And in this instance, they're massively profiting off of legislation that is going to screw over countless Americans. Countless Americans. There was a study that found another 28,000 people will die every year if Trump Care passes, on top of the 45,000 people that already die in the U.S. because they don't have access to basic health care. Remember, this is about an $800 billion cut to Medicaid. It's a gigantic tax cut for the richest people in the country. I think, the people in the top 1% or 0.1%, they get $200,000 more each in their bank account every year. So you have a bill which kicks millions more people off health insurance, by the way, their private health insurance, and then also the Medicaid cuts. So people are just losing their health insurance left and right. And it's a massive redistribution of wealth from the middle class to the rich. And you're now making the protections for pre-existing conditions like voluntary. It goes on a state-by-state basis now. So what will happen is all the red states will say, yeah, we don't want to, you don't have to give people protection for pre-existing conditions in our state. So what's going to happen? people are going to get screwed, and the profits of the health insurance companies are going to go up. You're also allowing them to price gouge people. You know, what was the analysis? It said that a 64-year-old with average income, middle income, their premiums would go from $6,000 a year under Obamacare to $28,000 under Trump Care. So this is just a giant giveaway to the rich and the private health insurance companies. And lo and behold, look at that. The Republicans are investing in the private health insurance companies as they pass legislation that is going to benefit them, which now is also going to benefit the Republicans financially, as everybody loses their health care. Loathsome, soulless, savage cretins. That's what they are. So this is as bad as it gets. And as everybody, I need everybody to fucking focus. Corporate media, come on, let's get off the foot. Trump tweet is, oh, it's a wrestling tweet. He's clotheslining CNN. You're encouraging violence against journalists. Keep your eye on the ball. They're fucking you over every day when it comes to policy. You don't need to focus on the menial bullshit. Focus on the real stuff. And if Americans really knew the details of what was going on, the Republicans would never win another election. The corporate Democrats would also get wiped out, too. You'd only have principled populist leftists win from here on out if the media educated us and really shined a light on the things that we all should know. They should be a watchdog. If the media was being a watchdog, they would call this out, and this would be the biggest scandal ever. Okay. Now, we continue. All right, let's go to some good news. Well, kind of good news, you'll see. Justice Democrat Representative Ro Khanna introduced a bill last month that I want to share with you, because it's awesome, and it generated almost zero press. So listen to what they say here. Representative Ro Khanna introduced new legislation that would tax wealthy corporations that do not pay their employees a living wage. The Corporate Responsibility and Taxpayer Protection Act would make large corporations, not the taxpayer, pay for the costs of federal programs that low-wage employees turn to in order to make ends meet, such as nutrition or housing assistance. When large corporations underpay their employees, it hurts working families who are living paycheck to paycheck. It also places a burden on the taxpayer who pay for the benefits and services low-wage workers need to help put food on the table or ease housing costs. In fact, low-wage wages cost taxpayers $152.8 billion per year, according to a 2015 University of California, Berkeley Labor Center study. The reasoning behind the Corporate Responsibility and Taxpayer Protection Act is simple. An employee making minimum wage, bagging groceries, should not have to rely on nutrition assistance to put food on the table for his or her family, and taxpayers should not have to subsidize low-wage workers so wealthy corporations can get richer. Now, here's why this bill is so important, and here's why it should have become law immediately. This should have been a unanimous vote across the board, Democrats, Republicans, everybody. Trump, everybody should say, oh, come on, this is a no-brainer. Because you get the best of both worlds in this. So what I mean by that is, what's the best of the progressive world in this bill? Living wage. Living wage. Hey, if somebody works a full-time job, they should make enough money to survive. You know, that radical position. Yeah, we file that under duh. That's the way it should be. It's clear it should be like that, but it's not like that right now. It's not like that. The minimum wage is a poverty wage. So Ro Khanna's bill says we're going to do a living wage. If you don't do a living wage, you get penalized with taxes. And we're going to make it so that it's more profitable for the corporation to do a living wage. Because if you don't do the living wage, it's punitive. You're going to get punished through higher taxes. So that's the best of the progressive world in this bill. The best of the conservative world is what? Well, the way the system functions right now, as they just explained here, when a worker makes poverty wages, somebody's got to make up the slack. Because you can't have people, you know, millions and millions of people starving in the streets. So who makes up the slack? What happens? Well, that's when people go to programs like SNAP, food stamps. That's when they have to run to government programs in order to make up the difference between what they make at their full-time job, where they make minimum wage, and the living wage. So, like I told you, like this this study outlined, low wages cost taxpayers $152.8 billion per year because the taxpayers have to make up the difference between what the minimum wage is that the corporation is paying the worker and what a living wage is. So the Republicans should be on board like that as well because they go, oh, this is a no-brainer. We're going to save $152.8 billion for the taxpayers. So, yes, you can cut government, limit government, reduce the size of government, make government smaller and more efficient if you just make corporations pay workers their fair share, pay them a living wage. So that's conservatism 101, smaller government, less of a burden on the taxpayers. Here's a crazy idea. Make corporations pay their workers what they deserve, what their fair share is, what they're owed. Right now, they're artificially being underpaid, the workers are. So Ro Khanna introduces a bill that is the best of the progressive world, living wage, best of the conservative world, smaller government. Yet nobody covered this in the media. And have you heard anything about this, either in the media, other politicians talking about it? Have you heard anything? Where's the vote on this? Why wasn't the vote immediately? Why didn't it fly through the House and the Senate? Why isn't Trump bragging as he's signing it the tremendous piece of legislation that says, why not? Why is that not happening? You know the answer. Because politicians are bought by corporate America. The only people, you can't, there's no ideological, philosophical reason to be against this bill. There's only corrupt reasons to be against this bill. The corrupt reasons being, look, I get paid by the corporations. They give me campaign contributions, so I'm going to do their bidding. And even though they're the one group of people in the country that don't want this legislation to pass, that's who I'm representing. I don't give a fuck about progressive ideology or conservative ideology or what's right for the American people or what's right for poor people. I don't care. I don't care what's best for taxpayers, anybody. That's not a consideration. My consideration is I want to keep winning elections. The best way for me to win elections is to sell out, raise money from big corporations, and then lie to everybody and tell them how great I am while they keep funding my ads and they keep getting my name out there. It is infuriating that an idea that is clearly bipartisan. Again, media, where are you? This is as bipartisan an idea as you could ever get, ever. Ever. Smaller, more efficient government. Save the taxpayers money. Conservatives should love it. Living wage. Progressives should love it. Democrats and Republicans should be high-fiving over this. Go, yes, we got a piece of legislation that's totally bipartisan. But they're not because it's not a real debate they're having. They have donors who they are serving, and that's the way that politics works, which is why a Princeton study found a few years back that the U.S. effectively functions as an oligarchy. Not a democracy. What you want doesn't translate into law. What the rich want, wants what they want. Apparently I'm having trouble talking here. That does translate into law. So this is credit to Representative Ro Khanna. He's doing the right thing. One of the few who are fighting for the right things, which is why we're proud to call him a Justice Democrat. But there's not enough. There's not enough of these people doing the right thing. So, you know what? We always like to do the, hey, go after people when they fuck up. We do that all the time. But we rarely do the opposite. You know, go find Ro Khanna on Twitter and go thank him for fighting for the right things. Because this is the right thing. And it should be the case. It's not Ro's fault that all the other corporate Democrats, the sellout Democrats, are just, you know, ignoring what's a superb piece of legislation. And then when the Democrats keep losing, they're going, oh, I don't understand. Why do we lose? Because when you have incredibly intelligent and reasonable legislation that would help the American people, like this bill, you are nowhere to be found. Ro Khanna was doing all the heavy lifting while, you know, your ass was screaming about Russia at a town hall. You were saying, Trump is bad. Isn't he bad? Yeah, he's so bad. Anyway, you guys going to vote for me? You're out there doing low-level, dull commentary, not inspiring people because you don't care about the issues, and Ro's doing all the heavy lifting, focusing on real issues and trying to improve people's lives. So don't come back and, oh, I don't understand. Why are we getting beaten everywhere? The Democrats really thought they were going to win those four special elections since Trump's election. And they got their asses handed to them. I mean, think about that. How sad is that? Yeah, we're going to probably take all four special elections. Oh, shit, we lost all four special elections? Why? Because when you have good Democrats proposing good legislation, you're like, new phone, who dis? Oh, you mean we actually should push for a living wage and for incredibly, intelligent bipartisan legislation that also shrinks the size of government? No, I'm gonna go do a fundraiser with Wall Street and then scream about Trump Russia a little bit. Thank you, Ro Khanna, for doing the right thing. He's leading by example, and all the other Democrats need to get on board or else. That's why we're primarying the corporate Democrats over at Justice Democrats, because we're sick of it. We're sick of you not standing for anything. What do you stand for? If you don't stand for Medicare for all, for free college, for a living wage, for ending the wars, for a new deal, get the fuck out of our way. Because that's the only way you're going to inspire people to vote for you, is if you stand for making their lives better and making this country better, and you don't because you got nothing to say about the most reasonable piece of legislation ever proposed. And by the way, justicedemocrats.com/donate. Let's get these guys over the edge, man. We got to win these elections. We have to do it. All right, now... Let's move on here and talk a little bit about our boy Bernie. So the other week, there was a report out that Bernie Sanders' wife, Jane, was under federal investigation. Oh, my. For bank fraud. Wow. It's always so sad when, you know, people fuck over those noble institutions like the big banks. They're so noble. So I read the articles about it, and I decided not to cover the story. Now, why would I do that? Well, the story seemed fishy. Basically, they said what happened is she got a loan to expand a college. She was on like a board that made these decisions. She got a loan to expand a college, and the expansion didn't work as well as they planned. That's pretty much it. They say, oh, you lied under the conditions to get the loan from the bank. And they also say, well, Bernie used his influence as a senator to try to pressure the loan to happen. Quite simply put, I don't believe it. I just don't believe it. That's not Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, like, using leverage as a politician, he wouldn't even fucking go for the jugular against Hillary. So really, he's going to go for the jugular against anybody? I mean, it's not in his nature to pull the do-you-know-who-I-am card. Like, and again, the subject matter here is a loan to expand a school. Like, what the fuck? Outrageous. Let's say she did. Oh, my God, you fudged the facts to try to get a loan to expand a school. What a criminal. Can you believe it? Taking all this money and using it for greedy reasons like educating people. it's just so stupid. Like, it's the biggest non-scandal of all time. And again, I just simply don't believe it. Like, I don't believe the telling of the story that people came up with because it seems so far-fetched and ridiculous. Well, now, guess what? We learn this. Quote, a new report reveals that headline-grabbing allegations that Jane Sanders, wife of Senator Bernie Sanders, had committed bank fraud came from a secondhand source, the minority leader of the Vermont House of Representatives. According to the Associated Press, Republican lawyer and former Donald Trump campaign leader Brady Tonzing accused Sanders of fraud based on information he got secondhand from Republican State Representative Don Turner. The report also noted that Tonzing served as the representative in Vermont for Trump's campaign last year and continues to stand by the allegation despite acquiring the information indirectly. Quote, this was not a country store Cracker Barrel rant, Tonzing said. Really? Because it sounds like that to me. So let me get this right. You played a game of telephone with Republican jackasses who already hate Bernie Sanders. They presented no evidence. They were talking out of their ass. It made national news, and nobody ever asked them to really back it up. So one Republican who hates Bernie told another Republican who hates Bernie that Bernie's wife, yes, is in serious trouble under a federal investigation. By the way, how the fuck would you know? How the fuck would you know? How would a random Vermont politician at the state level, how would you know anything about a federal investigation? This appears to be fake news. So, color me shocked that allegations of fraud and corruption against Bernie Sanders and his family are utterly made up in order to try to discredit them. See, you have to break out, you know, tactics like this when you're up against somebody who's principled and who really cares about stuff, because how are you going to take them down a few pegs when, you know, their positions are overwhelmingly popular and they're for the people and they have a track record of fighting for the people? What do? You smear them. You smear them. You can't win. I'll say, yeah, hey, isn't that crazy? The legislation this guy's for, I mean, wanting to give everybody health care, what a dick. So you have to smear him. Can't win like that, so I don't know, Jane Sanders, maybe, maybe not, has some weird things going on. I hear she's maybe under investigation for doing a horrendous, selfish thing like expanding a school. So ridiculous. Okay. All right, let's take our final break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about how YouTubers are getting involved in the net neutrality debate, and then I have some really weird stories, including a guy was caught doing anti-Trump graffiti. But the spin on that story is the most hilarious I've ever seen. So stay right there. We'll be right back, guys. Hey, yo, you niggas must be out your fucking mind. Yo, shit, can't pull another motherfucker. Yo, niggas, grab it up.
Think they fraud, only know how to be one way, that's the dog. I know
Remember? Damn. Okay, let's move on to what my fellow YouTubers are doing. YouTubers are getting involved in the net neutrality debate and trying to make a difference for the better. Listen to this. A group of more than 100 YouTube stars is calling on the Federal Communications Commission to preserve its net neutrality rules, which are currently in the process of being repealed. In an open letter posted on Thursday, 132 internet entrepreneurs said that eliminating the rules could imperil their industry. Online video traffic already represents over 70% of all global web traffic and is estimated to grow over 80% of all traffic by 2020, the letter reads. Our rapidly growing industry employs hundreds of thousands of people, and yet it barely existed more than a decade ago. As creators in this fast-moving industry, changes to the existing net neutrality rules would have an outsized impact on our field and jeopardize our livelihood. Among the acts
signing, among the acts signing the letter are Benny Fine of Fine Brothers Entertainment, a group that runs a popular comedy video channel on YouTube and other platforms. The Fine Brothers have 15.7 million subscribers on YouTube alone. Also signing on to the letter is Dane Bodegeimer, whose web series The Annoying Orange has nearly 6 million YouTube subscribers. Altogether, the signees reach a collective audience of 160.6 million people, according to the Internet Creators Guild, which organized the letter. The letter is addressed to Republican FCC Chairman Ajit Pai, whose proposal to do away with net neutrality rules legal framework is currently in a public comment period. We're in this for the long haul. We will fight for as long as it takes to convince you and your colleagues to oppose any legislation or regulatory changes that would threaten real, enforceable Title II net neutrality, the group writes. These protections promote cultural and economic freedoms that drive creativity, job creation, and investment in broadband, and importantly, prevent telecom monopolies from controlling what we see, hear, and create on the Internet. So this is, a rare issue where you actually should have bipartisan agreement among actual people, not soulless politicians, but where, somebody like Glenn Beck should be able to get together with somebody like me, and we say, look, man, don't change these net neutrality rules, because the way it works is, the way the rules are right now, it makes it so that the Internet is open and free. You have equal access to anywhere you want to go online. If they get rid of these net neutrality rules, what happens is the Internet service providers, they can basically create a slow lane. They say, oh, it's a fast lane. Fast lane for some. No, that would mean people who basically pay their bribes get faster or normal Internet speed, and people who don't pay their bribes can't afford to pay their bribes because they're not a giant corporation. Well, then they get their Internet slowed down big time. So you'd have this fractionalization of the Internet, where one Internet service provider has a deal with all these companies, this Internet service provider has a deal with all those companies, that Internet service provider has a deal with all these companies. And it's like you'd be effectively shopping around as to which Internet service provider you're going to get based on what sites have a deal with that Internet service provider, and the ones who are not in that network of that Internet service provider, they get everything slowed down. So it's a horrible idea. It's a terrible idea. And, the last time around, what happened was there were enough big money donors who were against net neutrality, well, the removing of the net neutrality rules, I should say, that we were able to defeat it under Obama. So there were a lot of Wall Street firms that invested in startups, and the startup companies would get crushed if you remove the net neutrality rules. So they were able to lobby enough to kill this. But now the Internet service providers are winning the lobbying battle behind the scenes. Trump, is basically appointing what is effectively a wet dream for the Internet service providers. Ajit Pai is just their water boy, and he's doing whatever the fuck they want. And now, net neutrality is on the way out. In fact, they already made the decision that it's going to go on the way out, that it's done. So this is horrible, man. This is absolutely terrible. Here's the real threat to free speech. That's the point in this story, is that the real threat to free speech is corporate control over speech. So when you regulate the Internet as a public utility and say it's open and free and you have equal access to everywhere, no matter what the political opinions are or the financial situation is of a given site, well, that's the way it should be, because it's a public utility. Everybody has equal access, free, you go wherever you want. But this is going to make it so that now it's time to play favorites. Who is going to pay their bribes to the Internet service provider? Okay, you're going to get faster access. Hey, who's talking in a political way that might damage the ISP? Because if somebody's, taking swings at the ISP, maybe you slow down traffic to their site too. Maybe if somebody expresses the incorrect political opinions, you slow down access to their site, too. And that's why people on the right and the left should be equally concerned about that. People on the right would think, well, they're going to slow me down because they're not going to be kind to right-wingers. People on the left, like me, are going to say, well, I'm not very fond of the corporate takeover of our politics, I'm going to rail against that, and they'll slow down access to me. So it's terrible, man. You don't want to go down this road because this is the slipperiest of all slippery slopes. It is inevitable you get more corporate control, which effectively is authoritarian control, over the internet. Couldn't get any worse, man. When they couldn't find a way to regulate it at the government level, control the speech at the government level, because you have the First Amendment, you can't do that, that's when now they're deferring to, well, we'll have the giant multinational corporations and the internet service providers, then they can control it. Terrible. This is terrible, and I think these YouTube stars are right to do this. And I'm a little bitter that nobody reached out to me to ask me to sign on to that letter, because I would have done it. And what was the number again? They reach an audience of... Wait for it. 160.6 million people they reach. That's what it says. That would have sounded a lot better if it said 161 million people. And if you reached out to me, we would have been able to say 161 million. So, yeah, a little bitter that they didn't reach out to me. But then again, it was organized by some – well, it wasn't by the YouTubers themselves. It was by whatever parent, you know, company they're all part of. So, but, yeah, I think I could have generated a hell of a lot more signatures from other YouTubers I know for this letter. But to be fair, the people who I could have gotten to sign it are probably people who they don't want to have their – this letter doesn't want to be associated with our controversial names. So maybe we would have brought down the letter in class. No, that's not the right word. We would have brought down the letter in respectability in the eyes of the establishment. That's the best way to describe it. Okay. Now... let me do a little impromptu story here. You know, I see a story here that popped up during the break that really caught my eye, so I read it during the break, and it is some scary shit, man. So apparently, hackers have been targeting companies that operate nuclear power stations around America. And the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI issued, quote, an urgent warning about the severity of the threat. That's something that one can lose sleep over. Like, what the fuck, man? Human beings are amazing. Like, think about, we create these nuclear power plants. We don't even know how to shut them off, oftentimes. You know, you have a situation like Fukushima, which is just an ongoing disaster, which nobody talks about anymore. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Why are we continuously fucking everything up? It's really, really frustrating. But now you have hackers targeting nuclear power plants. So let me read you more of what they say here. Both the New York Times and Bloomberg published details from a joint report released by the government agencies last month that described efforts by hackers to infiltrate the systems of nuclear facilities, including the Wolf Creek Nuclear Operating Corporation. The report did not provide details of the cyber attacks, but the Kansas-based Wolf Creek said the systems were not affected, according to the Times. Both publications, citing security experts and U.S. officials, said the attacks could be used to disrupt the power grid, and DHS and the FBI sent out a warning to utility companies on June 28th about the potential for hacking. The agency said on Thursday that there is no current threat to the public. Current threat. There is no indication of a threat to public safety, as any potential impact appears to be limited to administrative business networks, DHS and the FBI said in a joint statement provided to the Times. ENE News, a news site focusing on the energy industry, first reported that investigators were looking into multiple attacks on nuclear power generators this year. ENE said there was no evidence any systems had been compromised, but experts warned the existence of such threats points up the vulnerability of American power plants. Last week, Reuters said hackers have been using phishing emails in an attempt to harvest credentials for various energy sector networks. That is fucking terrifying. Historically, cyber actors have strategically targeted the energy sector with various goals ranging from cyber espionage to the ability to disrupt energy systems in the event of a hostile conflict. In 2016, the head of the IAEA, the United Nations Nuclear Watchdog, warned of potential for hacking at nuclear plants worldwide, citing an effective attack that caused some problems 2 or 3 years prior. This is not an imaginary risk, the IAEA director told Reuters in October. This issue of cyber attacks on nuclear-related facilities or activities should be taken very seriously. So here's a weird, angle to this story, but it instantly popped up in my mind as I was reading it. There's a lot of talk about we have to modernize our nuclear facilities and everything. That's actually a terrible idea in terms of our nuclear weapons, because right now our nuclear weapons are run on floppy disk. And apparently it's much harder to, hack that, if at all possible at all. So there's actually less of a threat to our nuclear arsenal in its current state. But if you were to modernize it and update it, well, then if you're using modern technology, and it would become much more hackable. So, we should probably keep that the same. Now, in terms of nuclear power, look, I get it. A lot of people say, oh, well, it's clean. It's clean energy. So it makes sense that we use nuclear, especially in this age of fossil fuels and stuff like that. When you look at Chernobyl, when you look at, 3 Mile Island, 5 Mile Island, whatever the fuck it's called, when you look at Fukushima, when you look at these kinds of threats, I don't know. I think there's better kinds of green technology. And, stuff like this, even though they say there's no current threat, this reminds me a lot of the nuclear company's reaction after Fukushima, where they're like, yeah, it's not that bad. And then as time went on, we realized, oh, it's actually worst-case scenario. So the fact that we're even having the conversation about potential hacking attempts into nuclear facilities is absolutely terrifying and leads me to want to push us in the direction of moving away from this as well. Okay. Now, let's talk about a goofball Trump supporter and what he's been up to. This next story is just bizarre. This guy's name is Stephen Marks. He's pretty funny looking, if you ask me. He's 32 years old, and he was caught doing graffiti at an elementary school playground in Connecticut, and he wrote messages like, "Kill Trump, left is best, Bernie Sanders 2020, and death to Trump." Now, he was caught on surveillance camera doing the crime, and when he was caught, he confessed like immediately. He said this, "I have anger towards liberals, and they are breaking major laws every day and being disrespectful towards our government." All right, first things first, what is that? That's not a crime. There's nothing wrong with that. You're allowed to be disrespectful towards the government. In fact, I venture to say most Republicans were super disrespectful to Obama. Now, some of it is fucked up in how they do it. Oh, you're Kenyan, you're Marxist, you're whatever. You fill in the blank with whatever smear they did against him. But that's not illegal. And furthermore, some of the criticisms are right. There were a lot of criticisms from the left where they would say, hey, 90% of your drone strikes are killing the wrong people. Not cool, bro. Or you go down the list. He unfortunately was too subservient to Wall Street. So the list goes on and on of the legitimate criticisms against Obama. So that's not like, oh my God, you're being disrespectful towards the government. Whatever, who cares? But you ready for this? He's not a progressive. This guy's a Republican who is trying to frame progressives. Kill Trump, left is best. People on Twitter were laughing about that because, what progressive or liberal do you know has said that? Left is best. Nobody's ever said that on the left. That's not a thing that we say. Bernie Sanders 2020 and death to Trump. An officer commented on this. He said, he admitted to doing the criminal act and said he regretted it. He said the reason he did do it was to show support towards Trump by having the other side bash him, to show how the other side is basically crazy enough to go and write stuff on a school playground. How do you not see the irony of that, man? Come on. Come on, come on. What are you doing? You wrote shit on a school playground, and it's actually even worse in your case because it wasn't even genuine. You're trying to frame the other side. You're like, yeah, you know, the other side's crazy enough to, like, do graffiti on a school playground. No, you're crazy enough to do graffiti on a school playground. That's what you did. Like, what do people, how dumb do you have to be, like, to think I'm going to have such a big impact on the national discourse here? I'm going to write some mean stuff on the playground and show how crazy the other side is. No, you would be showing how crazy you are when you do that. Do imaginary threats, man. There's enough real threats out there in the world. This is so stupid. This is so stupid. And by the way, look, the guy who did the shooting of Scalise, yeah, he was a Bernie Sanders fan. Bernie Sanders has never called for political violence, ever. And he consistently advocated peace, so you can't pin it on Bernie Sanders. That's crazy. He's obviously legitimately a lone nut in this instance who was a Bernie Sanders supporter. But you don't have to, like, point being, why do you need to make up shit when there's enough shittiness in the world as is? There's shittiness on the right, there's shittiness on the left. By the way, I don't think it's equal. That would be a false equivalence to say it's equal. But there's enough shittiness in the world. Why do you feel like you have to do this? Well, the answer is that he's not smart. What kind of a person does this? Like, that's like me going around and writing, when Obama was in office, writing fake Republican shit against Obama. Like, I didn't have to do that. There was enough of that shit already out there. Like, so that is kind of ironic, too. Like, he feels like he has to do this to prove a point. Well, if your point was really that legitimate, wouldn't you be able to go, hey, look, there's a lot of it right there. There's not really that much of it. I mean, Trump is a loathsome cretin, so many people rightly call him a loathsome cretin, so they would be correct in doing that. Now, I get it. Sometimes some people go too far and they have shitty lines of attack against him, like the Russia nonsense and a whole bunch of other stuff, but kill Trump, left is best, Bernie Sanders 2020, death to Trump, that mix of shit, there's very few people who would really want all of those things and believe all of those things. So this is why you had to invent the issue. Okay. Next. France just decided to make a pretty revolutionary step here. They're ending sales of petrol and diesel vehicles by 2040. So the new ecology minister, Nicolas Hulot, announced this yesterday. And it's a big step, man. Now, some people would say, and they'd actually be correct in saying this, that's still too late. Like, you should actually probably phase them out before 2040. Because we're already, like, past the point of no return on climate change and all that stuff. But it's still a big step because, this is something that has crossed my mind from time to time where I think, well, I mean, isn't a real move to, like, you got to totally get off of cars that run on gas? And I would always think, like, yeah, you do have to do that. But then the next thought is, well, that's never going to happen. Like, they're not going to, like, fucking outlaw that or something. Well, no, what they're doing is they're phasing it out in France, which is kind of like outlawing it. Like, okay, over time, there's going to come a point where there are no more gas cars produced. That's the right move. Again, maybe they should do it sooner, but who the fuck am I to criticize? Our government's nowhere near considering that. They're going in the other direction. They're, like, limiting they're getting rid of the fuel efficiency laws. So there's another angle to this story, too, which is there's all this talk about, from the right about how, Well, you got to understand, if we move towards a green economy, you're going to lose jobs, man. We can't lose jobs. They're like jobs. They're so important. Yeah, but what jobs are you losing? Which jobs are you losing? You'd be losing jobs that are going to go away anyway. And you'd be actually blossoming a whole new part of the economy, a whole new industry. So you would net gain jobs. It'd be a good thing for the economy. This is like what the Republicans are doing is the equivalent of trying to hold on to the Morse code industry as the telephone industry is just sitting there. So we're just going to sit back and let other nations go full speed ahead with the telephone industry while we're like, no, we're good with Morse code, bro. Just leave us be with Morse code. Morse code is great. We love Morse code. It's just so dumb. Like, why would you do that? They do that because they think climate change is a hoax. So they don't want to get off of oil and fossil fuels because they don't think there's a reason to. So they stick with primitive technology as other nations now are moving towards the future. And the main point is we're going to miss out on all of these job opportunities with green jobs and renewable energy. There are patents waiting to be had in the field of renewable technology and green energy. New technologies on the verge of being developed. It's like we're right at the beginning of another internet boom, except this time it's with green technology. And the U.S., the administration in the U.S. is just keeping us lagging behind. And by the way, it's not just Republicans. Under Democrats, they only go like, what, 5%, 10% of the way that we should go? Because big money has affected our politics so much that they're doing the bidding of corporations, and corporations are so heavily invested in oil and gas still being around. So the Democrats don't go far enough. The Republicans go actively in the wrong direction because they're totally bought by big oil. And now the rest of the world is just going to fucking lap us and create more jobs, create more opportunities for people, have a cleaner environment as a result of it. So it's great for France. It's great for the world. It's bad for the U.S. because we should catch up. We should leapfrog them. You know, we say, oh, by 2030, we're going to do it. That's what we're going to do. By 2030, we're going to phase out all new all sales of, you know, gas cars. But that's not going to happen because we have an administration that thinks the environment is a hoax. Listen to Scott Pruitt talk about anything that has to do with pollution, anything that has to do with climate change, and you'll see we're up shit's creek without a paddle. Okay. Next. The Democratic governor, hold on one second. Oh, actually, yeah, this is the last story. Last story of the day, y'all. Last story of the week. The Democratic governor of Virginia decided to move forward with the execution of a mentally ill man last night. So listen to this. Convicted killer William Morva has been executed despite his mental disorder and appeals from the daughter of one of his victims to Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe to halt the execution. The lethal injection was administered around 9 p.m. local time, and Morva's death was declared about 15 minutes later. Morva simply answered no when asked if he had last words, according to witnesses. Virginia Department of Corrections spokeswoman Lisa Kinney said there were no complications with the execution, according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Morva's lawyers insist that he was suffering from a severe mental illness that the jury was not aware of when they sentenced him to death. Jailed in 2005 for trying to rob a convenience store, Morva escaped a year later when he was taken to the hospital to treat an injury. At the hospital, he overpowered an officer and took his gun, with which he killed unarmed hospital guard Derek McFarland, a father of two. Before he was captured, Morva also fatally shot Montgomery County Sheriff Eric Sutphin in the back of the head. The late sheriff's daughter, Rachel Sutphin, had argued Democratic Governor McAuliffe to halt the execution of her father's killer. So the kid of one of the victims was like, look, you know, I hate this guy, but killing him is not going to accomplish anything, and I'm against the death penalty for moral reasons, and, you know, you can't say killing is wrong by killing somebody. That doesn't make sense, so don't do it, and I'm going to basically lobby on behalf of the guy that killed my father. Which is like, damn. But the key part of the story to me is they go on to explain how after the trial and everything, he was diagnosed with something called delusional disorder, which is very similar to paranoid schizophrenia. And so I guess the jury wasn't privy to that information. And it was after the fact that he was diagnosed with it. So they went on and carried out the execution as if he didn't have a severe mental illness. But if he had a severe mental illness, and the evidence is really there, as they indicate, well, then that would just be flat out unconstitutional. You're not allowed to kill somebody who has a severe mental illness. So, and that's not open, that's not, like, disputed. That's, the Supreme Court has ruled that. Like, no, you, that is unconstitutional. We have a ban on cruel and unusual punishment, the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. If you're killing somebody with a severe mental disorder or somebody who's, you know, mentally retarded, then you're not allowed to do it. You can't do that. So this is a unique case because apparently the diagnosis came after the trial, so everybody acted on the information that he wasn't severely mentally ill. And so people reached out to the governor, including one of the victim's daughters, reached out to Governor Terry McAuliffe, by the way, a Democrat. He's like, hey, man, look, we have this new information. Can you halt this execution? He's like, no. Go ahead. Move forward. And look, I got no love for this dude because look at what he did. I mean, I described it for you. That's brutal. It's vicious. He killed two people, including somebody, a father of two. So I got no love for this motherfucker. But, you know, life in prison without the possibility of parole, there's no love there. The dude's never getting out. No possibility of parole. So, I don't know. I think that would have been the best course of action. But, unfortunately, we went in a different direction. And, by the way, Terry McAuliffe is one of those guys where his name is floated for running for president in 2020. Please. This is like, he's like best friends with the Clintons, by the way. I mean, you want to talk about the last gasp for the neoliberal, new Democrat, centrist corporatists. Terry McAuliffe is that, but this shows how tone-deaf he is, man. Again, despise the guy who did the crime, horrendous crime. He should be locked up without ever having the possibility of parole. But the death penalty itself is suspect enough because we kill the wrong people 4% of the time, by the way. So right off the bat, if you're in favor of the death penalty, you're in favor of sometimes murdering people. Hey, sometimes it happens from time to time. Sometimes we murder 4% of the wrong people. So that's suspect enough. But in this instance, we know the guy did it, but he may be severely mentally ill. He almost has schizophrenia, delusional disorder. So I don't know. To execute that guy, that's just flat out unconstitutional, and you probably shouldn't do it. We should be bigger than that, and we should have given him, you know, life in prison without the possibility of parole. So this guy is not really in touch with the Democratic base, and this is just another example of that. Okay. We are done, baby. We're actually 5 minutes early. Wow. Rare occurrence of us finishing early. Program notes. Let's see. Back to a normal week tomorrow. Full schedule. You know the deal on that. And, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. All right, guys. I love you. Everybody, enjoy your weekend. We'll be back Monday, same time, same place. And we'll talk to you soon. Peace.